The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello, and welcome to the eighth night of Millennial 2023. I think this is. And there are going to be five streams tonight, four interviews. Later on, it'll be Jared Taylor, and then Furious Pertinax, and then Black Pilled. And then at the end, I'll be doing an AMA on my own, just to mark the fact that we'll then, at that point, be halfway through the Millennial schedule. But first, I'm here with Stefan Kort. So Stefan is a German analyst, writer, and hopefully politician. So Stefan, would you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yes, sure. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I have to say, this is the very first time for me as I participate in such a program, as I just mentioned to you when we were in live. I am my English is, average, I would say. If there is a delay because I'm looking forward, please accept my apologize in advance. Anyway, I originally come from a commercial background and was a self-employed entrepreneur for almost all my life. I trained in business administration and marketing, and later I started studying politics. I have been a member of the Alternative for Germany since 2016, and I was actively involved in 2017 and 2021 parliamentary election campaigns. I was a board member of the local constituency of the AfD and worked for the Alternative for Germany for 5 years in the highest German parliament in the Bundestag. I worked there in the area of public relations as an office manager, and I was a consultant for internal and European affairs. During my work for the AfD, I established many contacts in Eastern Europe and organized delegation trips, international conferences, and so on and so forth. And from November last year until June this year, I've wrote a book about geopolitical upheaval in Eastern Europe. And all of that, of course, from a German perspective. Yeah, so far, so good.
Right. Well, we can get into a lot of that as we speak. So the first thing is to, when we said we were going to talk about the political situation in Germany. Now, that is obviously a huge topic.
That is a big topic. I made some notes because otherwise it would be impossible. Yeah.
Well, see, one thing that... Would it be fair to say that the CDU dominates German politics, or is that no longer the case?
Well, it is still the case somehow, but I think this is decaying, this is declining, this dominance. But during the Merkel era, this dominance was still present. And but the people in Germany are unfortunately always, they forget too easy what happened in the last election period. So now they are struggling. Of course, they are struggling with the actual government, and then they say, "All right, maybe the CDU might do it better." But
it's the same in every country. You know, the public have a very short memory, and it's like a pendulum swinging from they'll go to Labour for 10 years, and then they'll go to the Conservatives. And then 10 years later, they'll be going back to Labour, and endlessly. But as things change in the world, as society gets worse and worse, I think there is that seems to be less relevant. I think there is a way in for new parties. I mean, the Conservatives, I wouldn't be surprised if they're never in power again in Britain. And I say that because I'm hoping the situation is true in Germany.
It is. I mean, there's always a way, especially if you have the electoral system as we do have it. Because you are in Britain, have even more problems to get your will through to the politicians. Yeah. As you can see there, it is the right mug for the right time. indeed, the AfD is, but still, it is the only solution we have in Germany. The only party you can trust that they would actually do things in the favor of the German people and in the interest of Germany. Everything else, what is there at this point, is simply
a system. It seems like establishment parties.
That was the word I was looking for.
There's not much to choose, but they're all very similar, it seems to me. And also bland.
I think what really have to be said that this political situation in Germany is at this point quite special. And I would like to summarize it in one sentence and would say that the current situation is a prime example of how misguided and destructive in actually every respect these left-wing policies of I call them notorious deniers of reality, are. And it all started with the Merkel regime. Oh, I'm sorry. I said regime. I'm so sorry. That was not meant to be. But somehow it's the truth. Anyway.
How long was she
16
chancellor?
Years.
16 years.
16 years, and nobody actually knows why. I mean, this is a mystery somehow. And especially because, I mean, I heard that I watched a couple of your programs, and you were already talking about the migration crisis of 2015. But we all call it crisis. It's funny because it was very much a calculated thing. It was something that happened on purpose, and so it was kind of a coup, actually.
Absolutely. It wasn't a crisis in the sense that it just happened and the politicians had to react to it. It was something that they made happen, and that's very obvious.
Yeah.
I think calling it a crisis was part of the
deal.
Lying to the public.
Yeah.
From the very beginning.
It's interesting to see, if you see, I mean, Merkel criminally disregarded German and European law and opened the borders to everything and everyone. And interestingly, none of the big European countries like the UK, France, filed any complaint about it. They just accepted every decision Mrs. Merkel made. Yeah, and this is absolutely peculiar, if you ask me. I mean, nothing that happens on a daily basis.
Yeah, Merkel seems to be a very... She seems to be a strange person, but then I don't know how...
I've seen her several times in the parliament. I can tell you she is a strange person. I mean, imagine one thing, just something on the side this year. Whenever I saw her in the parliament, and the parliament is a safe house. There's no one comes inside, gets in without the proper search and so on and so forth. But she was the only politician that had three guards with her at all time in the parliament. And I thought that was a bit strange already.
Yeah, that is. What I mean is, when I say that she seems strange, she seems kind of mechanical, like a robot.
Yeah.
But I don't know how unusual that is, because a lot of politicians seem like this nowadays, in Britain as well, where there doesn't really seem to be a person there. It's more like an automaton, and just operating on a program. They don't seem to really believe in or care about anything at all. And I think this is a terrible type of person to have power, to be a politician.
Yet I think it's a terrible way, terrible person to have a conversation with. I think, I mean, I've seen during my work, I've seen them all live and in color. All these stooges from Baerbock to Habeck and all the others, and yeah, it seems sometimes it really seemed like they can't do anything on their own. They need people to do their job on in every aspect. And it is always funny to see that when and then you ask yourself the questions: are these the people that really want to tell us, the people, how to live and what to do and what not to do? And this is rather strange.
Yeah. So how would you describe, just to get to summarize the, before we move on, it would be interesting to get your summary of politics in Germany today. What is the Overton window in Germany? What do the politicians get excited about, and what do they ignore, and so on? That kind of thing. Your own summary of just politics in Germany.
Well, it is, a summary is a bit it's a bit difficult to summarize what's
of course, but
happening at this moment. I've just made some notes so that I can maybe I just travel through them and see. If I shall stop them. And what is really awkward these days, because. The interesting point is that these people really managed to drag Germany to ruin a country like Germany. And what is very, very important at this point is that they were able to drag Germany into a war, not as a direct participant, but as one of the most important suppliers for weapons and money. And these decisions that have been made just before this Ukraine war started. Some people call it also a crisis, but I call it a war because people are dying. But you see, the medias and they all try to avoid the word war. Anyway, these decisions have been made that have caused an irreparable damage to the German economy and to the people in the country. At least to the short or medium term. And for example, the unilateral breach of contract with Russia to no longer purchase Russian gas, although it was an important and existential factor for the German economy, was not only a mad decision, it was a decision made on purpose with the goal to destroy a major part of the German economy. And then again, there are other things like the spending in the connection with the Ukraine war that are just insane. And Germany paid until this point 27.8 billion euros. Sorry to say it that blunt, but it burned taxpayers' money because it is ultimately wasted. Because it could not change the outcome of the war. Or the only thing that it did was to prolong the war and cause unnecessary death on both sides.
Ukraine was never going to win. People were
it wasn't.
Even as I don't know anything about war or military strategy, but it's just obvious. Russia has a much bigger army. It has more money. It's got more soldiers. So, obviously, it's going to win. It just seems inevitable, unless Ukraine had some incredible weapon that it could use, a magic thing, then no, Russia's inevitably going to win. It's just a matter of how long it takes.
The ratio is 3-1, man-wise. So this is one thing, but on the other, if these Ukrainian officers and that they send their soldiers to Germany and to Britain to get trained on Leopard 2s and on Challenger tanks, and when they know exactly how to use them because they got they know what kind of tactics they need And then if they're back in the Ukraine and they are they get their tanks delivered, and then they suddenly do something completely different. And then they ask themselves, hey, frack, why do we get killed? Why do we get busted? Seriously, I mean, there must sometimes you get this slight feeling that this is on purpose. Yeah, they burn their people, and you don't find the right answer because it is ludicrous in that way. Anyway, yeah.
Well. It seemed to be that I wanted to go back a bit further to talk about the migrant crisis, but also other things that nuclear energy, because that's now become a huge, very relevant issue as well. And just what the political issues are in Germany that politicians are allowed to care about, because it doesn't seem like they're allowed to care about things that really matter.
But I can give you a splendid example, because you were talking about this green energy, or how did you call it? And
renewable energy.
Or renewable energy and fossil-free energy and whatever. The thing is that especially our Green Party is very good in inventing marvelous laws that are completely insane, and that they would, if they would be able to imply this law, it would be a disaster for the German economy. For example, there is something that is called the heating law. Yeah, it was partially it was initially stipulated that all newly installed heating systems in Germany could only be based on heat pumps and on heat pumps only. And this heating law was partially stopped by the Federal Constitutional Court because it was unconstitutional. But the ideas behind it are so crazy that one cannot assume that those reasonable or that those who are responsible have ever thought about the consequences of such a law, and especially in the view of the enormous costs that this would cause for the consumers. But this clause in the law remains that all newly installed heating systems must be operated with at least 65% of renewable energy. In view, and that is the thing where you say, okay, these people don't think. In the view of the many old houses you have in Germany, and I do own one as well, especially in the rural areas, this isn't working. Yeah, you can't operate or you can't heat a house, an old house, like, for example, mine. It is made in 1870. It was built. You can't simply heat it up with a heating pump alone. It's impossible. But these people don't care about it. Yeah,
so it is practicalities. I should say that the Green Party in Britain is very small. Just so that people understand,
good for you,
in Germany, the Green Party is a much bigger presence in the political arena. Would you like to describe that? Because this is very important. Because the Green Party, I think this is to do with idealism, actually. I might be wrong, but I think it's to do with that the British people tend to be more, they're not so romantic about ideas as the Germans tend to be. And so the Green Party is a very minority party in Britain. But in Germany, that's not the case.
Well, I think in Britain, it has something to do with tradition and with your electoral system.
And
you had these two parties since I don't know when, and that's it. Thank you very much. But
it's the dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly. In Germany, we had the possibility to even I can establish a party if I like to, and call it the Stefan Korte Party. I don't know if I might be successful, but still I have the opportunity or the possibilities. And the Green Party, I would say this is the result of re-education, this allied re-education program that started just behind after the war. And of course, of the 68 movement, this pile of crap started in Germany, more or less. And the march through the through the instances, or I don't know how you say that in English.
Through the institutions.
Institutions, that was it, exactly. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, Germans are very naive. Yeah, they believe, first of all, they believe you before they don't trust you anymore.
Yeah, before they doubt.
That is a problem that we have, or that we always have. In Germany, we call it you're blue-eyed, blauäugig. To be blue-eyed means that you're a naive person and you believe too many stories that the people tell you. And I think this has something to do with it, that we have the 68 movement destroyed the educational system. I mean, our educational system declined from year to year, actually. But you can definitely see this decline in the last, I'd say, at least 20 years. There you can really see how it got quicker and quicker, this degeneration process in our educational program. And then again, the 68 movement, all the people, all these people who moved into these institutions, they changed everything. They changed the way children get taught. They changed the way children get educated, or in the kindergarten. And to make people just more stupid, and that's the reason why. And then, of course, pacifism is one thing that got big in the 70s. Yeah, and especially in Germany, be pacifistic is a good thing, because we are all bad Germans. We know all the stories. And you can sum this up, and then afterwards you have this soup of this green soup, not very tasteful, but it is there.
Right. Thank you. That is a nice summary, actually. And of course, that explains why something like the Green Party is attractive to a large section of the public, and why it has political influence in Germany that it certainly doesn't have in Britain. I think we've only got. I don't know if we've actually got any Green MPs, politicians in the parliament. We definitely had one, Caroline Lucas, but anyway, that doesn't matter. So the fact that minority parties can start and have much more of a chance of surviving and thriving is also why the AfD have come about. This is the same in the Netherlands, of course. It's the other various countries have a system that is far more kind to new parties. Britain, this is a disaster in Britain. I think that we should have a completely a different voting system, because
agreed,
it's just awful that we are basically stuck with these two parties who don't have to really do anything or change anything or care about anything.
No, they don't represent the ideas and the demands and whatever of the British or of the English people. And it's simply, I mean, there is the similarity to Germany. They actually do care more about aliens, about alien rights, about being woke and whatever, yeah, but not about the British. The British heritage, the British culture, and a proper educational system. These are the things you need to establish a functional society. Otherwise, it will crumble down to pieces, and we will be witnesses very soon if we don't do anything against it. This will happen.
Yeah, this is very real problems. I think my audience are very familiar with this. You know, the decline in education, the decline in culture, and the demographic replacement. These are all very salient, very important issues today. I don't know if there's anything more important than this.
One thing I would add on top of that, it's to get back our self-esteem, because we white people, yeah, and we Europeans, we get taught every day that we are the bad guys, that we are the bad people. We are responsible for everything. We Germans, we are responsible for killing 300 trillion people, at least. And the British are, of course, responsible for colonization and slavery and stuff like that, especially. I just this morning, I saw an interesting thing that our state television faked a story about German slave drivers during a time where no German colonization process in Africa was going on. So they mixed up everything, and then of course some people found out, well, this isn't working. That's not how it was. But this is the way they do it. They invent stories to make us look bad. But not only the Germans, not only the British, they want us in general, the Europeans, and even, let's be so frank to say, the white people, to be responsible for everything bad in the world. And this isn't true. I mean, if I see, and if I just look at Europe and see the achievements that comes out of every country in Europe, without them, there wouldn't be any civilization, in fact. Yeah. So there should
certainly nothing that we would call civilization. You know, standards, liberty, high culture, and of course all the systems of society, these things have all come from us. And I'm not saying that there's no such thing as Chinese civilization or Japanese. You know, yes, these have their own version of that. But our version of this, which is now very much hegemonic in the world, it comes from us. The idea of civilization is one that really has been shaped in Europe. To blame us for everything bad, no.
It's easy. It's the easiest way, right? You have to find a person who's guilty, and we are the people that complain the least. Yeah, would happen in Africa or wherever. They would just simply burn the city down, and they ask questions later.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the thing you said about Germans being naive. Another way to say that is that they're evolved, they're optimized for a high trust society. They're high trust people. And I think this is another wonderful...
It's very unhealthy in these days.
Yeah, it's a beautiful aspect of Northern Europeans. It goes for the Swedes as well. I think it's, to a lesser extent, the Brits, the English and the Scots, the Dutch, obviously, all of the Danes, the Denmark... this is part of what made our society so good in the first place and what enabled us to create incredible cultures. So
reliability
used against us is disgusting. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, you didn't. I just said it's the reliability. This is something, I mean, I'm not that old, but still my parents and my grandparents, they teached me these old fashioned things like being precise, being punctual, being reliable. Yeah. And I think this is what is lacking in our society in these days. And that's why the society is as shitty as it is, because people think they don't have to care anymore to being punctual or to say, all right, I'm going to help you. But I didn't say when exactly. And it could be any time, or it could be never ever. Yeah, but this is, and that is the big problem of our society.
Yeah, That lack of conscientiousness, I think, is a big problem as well. I think it comes because we live with such luxury that we assume we don't need to do things. We don't need to take things seriously. The system takes care of it for us, because a lot of the time it does. But I think it's also just to do with the decline of the concept of honor. Men are no longer, well, and women as well, are no longer taught that this is an important thing in life. This is an important thing that you can be. You can be an honorable person. That word, just the word honorable or honor, you never hear that now. And you did. I don't think in my lifetime it's been a common word to hear. And I think that's very, very significant.
That's true. That's true.
So let's get to the AfD then, because as I was saying, the political system in Germany is very bland and it's kind of stunted. You've got all these parties that are very middle of the road. And meantime, the situation in Germany is worsening all the time, but none of the parties are able to or even want to change it. And so that is how the AfD emerged. Could you summarize the history of the AfD? When did it begin as a party?
It began in 2013, where some people came together and wanted to establish a new party because things were already going downhill in 2013. Interestingly, these people were professors, these people were doctors, these people were, in general, very smart people that established, that founded the AfD. But still, from the very beginning, the AfD was someone who was identified as dangerous. Even though we never had at this point anything we didn't mention any kind of migration issue or whatever. The first thing that the AfD wanted was or what was on their agenda was the criticism of the euro, of the currency. Because it was already at that time, it was clear that the euro would be, or it is a failure, and it would fail one day. The question is not if, but only when. That was the point. And based on that, we had the AfD started to grow very quickly in 2013, because I think it was already time. That especially in the former part of the GDR, the East Germany, the people were already frustrated again by what was happening in Germany, because they still have this sense, they can still smell socialism if it comes towards them. And the whole EU system is nothing else than the Soviet Union 2.0. It is a totalitarianism, pseudo state. Yeah. And,
I heard that there's a phrase in Germany, like soft totalitarianism. I don't know.
Totalitarianism.
Soft. A German person told me that.
Okay.
But
I wouldn't go with soft because I think it is totalitarianism or it isn't, but it doesn't matter. We can have different ideas about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the EU, yes, I agree. It's totalitarian in the sense that it's a one system for all. And generally speaking, each of the member states, they're all going to become homogenous over time. I mean, that does seem to be the goal. And even the euro, the currency, that's another step.
Yeah, the currency is a failure one way or the other because it never worked. Yeah. A currency like that never worked in history of mankind. It was always a failure. That is one thing. But people never learn from history. It seems like that. On the other hand, it's also interesting to observe that that people from, I don't know, let's say from France, especially from France, that they would care about what's really going on in Germany, or from Poland, for example, and that these people shall decide about the fate of the German people, about what is going on, about how our farmers seed their corn and what type of corn and what kind of light bulbs you are allowed to use and what kind of hoovers you have to. They are just allowed to have 900 watts instead of 2,500. I loved my Hoover with 2,500 watts. It was really, really rock and roll. But now, no, because the EU says I'm not allowed to have it. What a nonsense. What do they believe? I mean, there are 30,000 people working in Brussels and in
Strasbourg,
and yeah, they consume a lot of money, for what? For these kind of decisions, for these important decisions that obviously neither the British nor the Germans can do on their own. Question mark? I mean,
yeah. But the other thing is that because there are so many people involved at these parliaments and the commission and so forth, they all need something to do. So they all they have to busy themselves with coming up with all sorts of silly ideas for new legislation and so on. So whereas in a national government, there are fewer people. So it's they don't come up with so many stupid ideas. They're not so obsessed with changing life. I think in the EU, they really are. They really do want to redesign your life. But it's not important to say it's not just the EU. It's also the NGOs, the World Health Organization, and all of that. These people need something to do, even just to justify their salaries. So what they do is this kind of thing, busybody behavior. And I think there's no end of it. I don't want to leap ahead here, but
if we are the subject of NGOs and stuff like that, let's talk about wasting money. Let's jump two steps back, because I prepared somewhere here at my desk. I prepared a couple of numbers because I think it's very interesting to see that or to hear how the German government is wasting German taxpayers' money. It's also very interesting. And then we will conclude with the question of the NGOs again, because the federal budget of Germany has hundreds of items that show where the world, where in the world German taxpayers' money is being wasted. And when you read it, you're really speechless. And I have here a couple of examples. The German taxpayer is paying 200 million euros that are being spent on implementing Colombia's climate targets. Yeah? See? Remember that? 184 million on fighting corruption in Serbia. Oh, well, good luck with that. 100 million on a socially just energy transition in Senegal. I'm not kidding. These are facts. Yeah, not kidding. 315 million euros of German taxpayers' money is used on buses and cycle paths in Peru. 84 million on the introduction of comprehensive health insurance in Tanzania. And believe it or not, 4 billion euros on green energy in Africa. So now it's up to you. So what do you say about that? But anyway, before you say something, on top of that, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, there are more items in the federal budget, but we don't have the time for telling them all. But
I'm sure it would be fascinating. But
it's amazing. Yeah. There are points where you really ask yourself a question: what the fuck? That is the only thing you can say. What the fuck is going on here? Anyway, on top of that, now we're back on the NGOs. I mean, billions. I'm not kidding. Billions of euros of taxpayers' money get distributed every year to NGOs all over the world, which are actually completely pointless, at least if you represent conservative values. To the outside world, of course, we all know it. Your viewers know it as good as we both. These institutions sell themselves as democratic and committed to peaceful coexistence of people, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. But in reality, these people are pursuing the transition of free societies under this guise. And genuine freedom of opinion is being replaced under this and with rules of behavior, of a vogue, over-tolerant and, I would say, pseudo-democratic lie. And these institutions are, they're establishing their globalist sham states wherever they can. And these leaders of these states, they are taking instructions directly from these NGOs. And if you ask, and this is what you can tell to everyone in every European country, if you ask yourself as a citizen, why is our government acting as they are completely insane? Yeah, especially in Germany, they are wasting German taxpayers' money wherever they can. They terminate important contracts with Russia. They send so much military equipment to the Ukraine that Germany is actually defenseless at this moment. If someone would attack Germany, yeah, we can just say hello, make yourself at home, and what can we do for you? This is what we could respond to any kind of threat from the outside. And this phenomenon, and this is interesting, can now be observed everywhere in Europe except for Hungary and Russia. And these are the bad boys again, right? It's interesting. Yeah. When you see the media, they are just firing whatever they can on Hungary, on Russia, on Russia. But when you see what's happening, what you read about Hungary, that they are so racism, so anti-democratic, and so forth. But you see, this is the end. The end result is that these are the two states that are still that still have a kind of a sane government, and we are the idiots.
Absolutely, and this and the term anti-democratic is used a lot with Viktor Orban, also with Trump. But let's not bring that into Orban is called anti-democratic. I don't really know what their evidence is for, like how they justify saying that. But if you look at our own societies, the Western European societies, how much is democracy worth here? And I'm not saying that I would welcome a tyranny. I'm just saying, what is our democracy that we are supposed to be celebrating when, as you say there, German politicians do all this insane stuff and there's nothing that the average German citizen can do to influence that and to change that. So how is Germany a democracy in any way that really matters? Now, the only way is you can get rid of these politicians by bringing a new party into it. But other than
that... And even there are obstacles, of course.
Indeed, absolutely, and we'll get into that. But apart from that, democracy in the West is not what it's cracked up to be. It's not some wonderful system. It's really just a vehicle for corruption.
The democracy is always, at least in Germany and everywhere else, actually, in the West, this democracy is only a democracy as long as you are talking about LGBTQ rights, if you talk about wokeness, if you talk about the poor, the peaceful religion of the Islam, if you talk about the poor people, the poor black people that are always get harassed by the whites. This is there we have a democracy. You can say whatever you want. You can joke about Jesus Christ, yeah. But if you say something about Mohammed, oh dear Lord, then it's getting again very anti-democratic. And if you, for example, say, oh, excuse me, but what about our rights? What about our human rights as the Europeans, as the white people? And this is not, I don't mean it in a racist way or whatever, but just simply in a fact that actually we have rights too. Yeah, it's not only the black people, it's not only the Muslims with their religion that it gets advertised on every corner at the moment. That you have a mosque at every corner in the western part of Germany, 2,400 mosques in the western part of Germany, and these are only the mosques. These are not the prayer rooms, because they don't have to be designated. It's ridiculous. Yeah, and this is the democracy we're living in. If you are if you criticize the system in the way it is behaving, then oppression is maybe a hard word, but you have problems, let's say it like that.
Yeah, they know how to get to you if you complain about that. Let's put it that way. They know how to persuade you, how to silence you, how to punish mm-hmm. you, how to demonize you so that other people don't take you seriously, and so forth.
And in Germany, we have this, they use, we call it the Nazi Club. Yeah. Yeah. They have this big bait, it's called Anti-Nazi Club. Yeah. Anti-Nazi bet. and they really hammer it down whenever there's the possibility to do it. The good thing is that as more you do it, and as often as you the more you use it, the less how do you say that?
Yeah, the less potency it has, the less power.
And
it
people has. People start to question the motives, because suddenly everybody is a Nazi. Yeah, the people who don't believe in all the storytelling of the corona, and of the vaccines, there are suddenly conspiracy theorists, and if they say something which is too nationalistic, of course they are Nazis, and it goes on and on and on. And this is this development is interesting, because whenever you do something let's say they're over, how do you say that? I would say it is too much. Simply, they overdid it in a spectacular way, especially with blaming everything that is out of the ordinary in Germany, blaming it to be a Nazi or to be a national, to be nationalistic.
Yeah, it may be overdid it. Yeah, and it's actually the same in Britain and America. The word Nazi is used, fascist, white supremacist, all of these, racist, of course. I do actually think these words are losing the weight that they used to have, the power that they used to have, because people have just heard it so many times, and about so many different people. Apparently, like, half of the people who are in the news are Nazis. we're all surrounded by them.
At least.
You know, it's crazy. It makes the person using that term just sound like a paranoid loon who can't engage seriously with any political issues or social issues. Their only recourse is to call their opponent a Nazi. Apart from anything else,
they believe in it.
Behaving like that,
they believe in it, and they really are absolutely convinced that everything they say, everything they do, is absolutely correct. And their political opponents, of course, that means we, yeah, we are the worst scum, and these people are so, I would say, yeah, so extreme in their whole behavior, that makes this thing bit by bit more ridiculous, and people stop to believe in this.
Yeah, I think if you believe that everything you do and everything you advocate is good, then by definition, anyone who disagrees with you must be bad or mad. They're mad, so they can't see that what you want is good, or they're bad, so they want to stop you from doing good. It's a very simplistic way of looking at the world, but
we call them the do-gooders, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think it is how they see themselves. And if you think of some young woman in an NGO working at the European Parliament or whatever.
Oh, God.
Everyone around her is telling her that what they do is build a better world. And what they do is help people. What they do is improve things. And so in her head, she is immersed in goodness, in sheer pure goodness, one way or another. They are making a better world. And there are people who disagree with them, people out there somewhere who want to stop them. Well, what's she going to think about them? She's going to think those people are evil. And then she's going to say it, and again and again and again. And she'll tell other people that, yeah, that there are evil people who oppose us. And I think they actually do believe it.
there's no way through. I mean, I've tried to talk with these kind of people, and and I also even tried to talk with people from the Antifa, yeah, which were harassing us on info stands. But the only thing these people say is, sorry to be rude, but go fuck yourself, yeah. As all, they swear the whole alphabet. But there's nothing substantial.
Antifa is its own thing. Antifa is different from, you know, some nice, well funded NGO. Antifa, in my experience,
funded by them. So
that's true. That's true. That there is that as well. But in my experience, Antifa tends to be...
The Antifa and other associations like this receive 800 million euros in taxpayers' money from the state every year.
That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, imagine how much money Germany would have had available if the government wouldn't waste all this. It's
unimaginable.
I don't want to say anymore.
that's just incredible. I mean, imagine I could have a proper studio set for Millennial if we had 800 million coming in.
Well, I mean, if this money wouldn't have been would not have been wasted, and hopefully this will not happen anymore in the future. I'm pretty sure. Just ask the AAP and you get a million and as donation or something like that. It doesn't matter.
Well, so to get back to the AFD then.
Yeah.
What are your own thoughts about it? You've had involvement with the AFD, you said, for more than 5 years.
7 years.
10 years, right.
Seven.
So what would you say about it in terms of how it has grown? What are its prospects, and what do you think it's done right, and what do you think it's done wrong along the way? As a matter of experience for other people to draw upon.
Yeah. Well, what is interesting at this point is that the actual government is doing so much damage to the society and to the people without noticing it, but we notice these kinds of things in the polls. Because the AFD has gained 13% in the federal polls within 2 years, and currently stands at 23% nationwide. And in the areas of the former GDR, the figures look even better. The AFD is consistently between 30 and 34% at the moment. And in concrete terms, this means that more than, and that is interesting now, more than 20 million people in Germany are now voting for the AfD, making it actually quite clear that their political interests should be represented by this party. And just tonight, something great has happened, because the AfD has won its first position as Lord Mayor in Pirna. So we have the AfD has a first Lord Mayor in Germany just today.
Oh, great.
Yeah, let's celebrate. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. That's great. That's great news. I'm very happy about that.
And this development I just mentioned is, of course, very unpleasant, naturally unpleasant for the ruling parties. And they're also associated, that was the word I was trying to say, lobbyists. And all of them, of course, fear for their existence and their monetary, monetary feeding troughs, I think it is the word. For this reason, the AfD, of course, as I already said, has been demonized in the truest sense of the word in the media since it was founded, and especially since it became clear that the AfD would have not remained just a marginal phenomenon. The office, that is also an interesting subject. The Office for the Protection of the Constitution, an authority that was actually created in post-war Germany, to monitor compliance with the Constitution and to admonish anyone who disregards it, including the ruling politicians, has become actually a protective power of the ruling class itself that tries to politically kill all those who have an opinion that differs from the mainstream. And they try to do this, of course, by persuading ordinary citizens that a party or an institution is either right-wing or right extremists in particular, and the insecurity of the people that we were just talking about earlier, this insecurity of the people, which results from the indoctrination by the media, and of course a questionable historiography, I think, is effectively used to make parties such as the AfD unelectable for many people, and the belief, and now we are coming back to the point that Germans are naive, the belief that an official authority acts neutrally and based on the basic democratic order is unfortunately still too strong, anchored in the people's minds. And otherwise, I would say that the AfD would already be polling well over 30% nationwide. And incidentally, Germany is the only country that has such an authority as the Office for the Protection of the Constitution, because it does not exist in any other country, because we should not mistake it for a typical domestic intelligence service, because the intelligence service in Germany is called BND, Bundesnachrichtendienst. So, and this... this institution is instrumentalized to work against structures, parties, and movements that criticize the system, that criticize the ruling class, so to say. Yeah,
the ruling system. But I know that there are talks about banning the AfD. Do you think that is a realistic prospect?
No. You remember the party, the NPD.
I've heard of it. National Democratic Party. Full of feds, apparently.
Pardon me?
I heard that it was just full of feds.
Yeah, it was. It was completely full of how do you call that in English?
Agents.
Agents. Yeah. We call them V-Leute. Yeah. They tried to ban this party, and they had they already had the trial on in court and so on and so on. And then it came out that. I don't know, every second, maybe every third party member was an agent. And then even they couldn't even ban the NPD, which was never over 5.5% in the federal polls. Never, ever. Then it never came, or it was never, the party was never able to get the, to take the hurdle to get into the federal parliament. And what do you think, what would happen? 5% are maybe 2.5 million people in Germany. What do you think would happen if a party like the AfD would be banned, which is in every, except for Schleswig-Holstein, in every local provincial parliament,
yeah.
Which is in the federal parliament, which is in almost every local parliament, city parliament, and so on. And we, as I said, we are talking at least of about at least 20 million people that are voting for the AfD. What do you think would happen? I think that would lead to a big boom. So yeah. No. Then and so this is just, it is again a typical way of manipulating the people, telling the people in the news and in magazines and whatever. Oh yeah, the possibility to ban the AfD. It is just to fear them. It is just to make the AfD, how is it, unvotable or
unelectable.
Unelectable.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the establishment trying to deal with the AfD, the first thing they would do is demonize them.
Yeah, and again.
But if that doesn't work, then their only option is to ban them, but they can't do that.
No.
Because that would lead to a backlash. So I don't know if there's anything that they can do against the AfD at this point, just more demonizing, even though that's proven to not work.
Yeah, they are still doing a lot of things. They are still doing a lot of things which you don't see because they happen behind the curtain, so to say. For example, every party in the federal parliament has the right to have a vice president of the Bundestag. Yeah, but except for the AfD, every vice president got voted by the parliament. But whenever the AfD brings up or comes up with a candidate, the other parties do reject it. So since 2 years, for example, and the election period before that, from 2017 to 21, it was the same thing. The AfD didn't have a vice president in the federal parliament, even though it is their constitutional right to have one. So this is one way, of course, to block and to punish the bad boys. But then again, we have the AfD is also connected to a foundation, and every other party in Germany has also the connection to a foundation, Konrad Adenauer Stiftung and many others. For this, for example, the foundation of the CDU. And they all receive huge amounts of money by the state, millions. Depends a bit on the amount of votes you get in an election. But I think in the last election, the foundation of the AfD should have got. I'm not sure yet. I was, let's say 10 million euros and they don't get it because they changed some laws, they stopped some procedures, and that's the way to, yeah, to deal with the AfD. And of course, this is difficult because, I mean, the AfD at this point has, I think, 32,000-33,000 members. They all pay their fees, hopefully, but it's not enough. And of course, there are some people who donate money, but this is money the AfD needs for their political work, and so they are denying it. And this is actually it is not only against, it is unjust, but it is also against the law. These are just two things that happen.
Yeah, I think this is something that we've discovered over the last 10 years or so, that the establishment can break the law, because in order to stop that or punish it for doing that, you have to take it to court. And to do that, you have to have huge amounts of money, because the establishment has huge amounts of money to spend on lawyers. So it's actually a very difficult thing to hold the establishment to account. And this is why the thing, speaking truth to power, is really utter nonsense. It doesn't work like that. You can't speak truth to power. You can only work it to build up your own power base. That's how it actually works.
The AfD is suing the government. It is happening. And
oh, it is happening.
Yeah. I mean,
well, I wish the best of luck.
We already had some. I don't remember exactly anymore what it was about, but we are the so-called pain in the ass for these people, and this is a very good thing. But it is also good. Just a couple of, I think, a year or a year and a half ago, there was a person that passed away and left his heritage to the AfD. And it was the small amount of 14 million euros. So that these are the small and the things that happen rarely, but when they happen, it's of course a blessing.
Yeah. I shouldn't be so absolutist. It is possible to take the establishment to court. It's just that you need a lot of money to do it. So
and sometimes we have it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is why they want to keep it poor. And you know, this is why people have a certain idealism about. You shouldn't ask for donations. You should be doing it for the love of it. That is completely unrealistic. You know, everything requires funding one way or another. I was only joking about having a studio set earlier, by the way. I wouldn't actually like that. I think it's nice. It's more cozy like this. So I don't want funding for that. But yeah, with this kind of thing, with lawfare, I mean, this is the word that people use in English. It's lawfare is becoming a huge part of, well, political wrangling. So, yeah, well, with all of that said, what are your, or is there anything else that you want to say?
Basically? Oh, yeah. I have a couple of more points because I think it's also interesting. I mean, maybe in the outlook for 2024, which will be a very important year, in Germany, it is also very interesting to observe that that this government of let's call it absolute incompetence seems to be it seems to fall out of favor with the important lobbyists, because an interesting development has been, or I observed it, and then many others did it too, that. Whereas until recently, the government and even Baerbock and her cohorts were almost godlike, yeah, and inerrant. But now the criticism, even in the let's call state financed television and media, it's getting very harsh. Maybe the reason why is that overall. Only 18% of the people in Germany are currently satisfied with the government's work. 18, yeah, 1-8, not 8-0. And in the meantime, 70% already of the voters are calling for new elections. And that is, of course, a disastrous result for the government. But no matter, I mean, if you see these people, I mean, Baerbock, Habeck, it doesn't matter. They're all so awfully incompetent. Especially because it's one of my fields of expertise. It's foreign policy, and then when you see what Baerbock is doing there, it's heartbreaking. Yeah, she changed the name. I mean, in Germany we have a tradition in the Foreign Office. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs, there was always a room that was called the Bismarck Room, yeah, das Bismarck Zimmer, and that was she just abolished it, yeah. She changed the name to something extremely woke, and maybe feminist, but that is amazing. I mean, no respect for the biggest foreign policy person that Germany ever had.
One of the most important politicians in Germany's history. Incredibly important guy. So, a figure.
Indeed, and it's amazing when something like this happens and no one. I mean, of course, yeah, the AfD complained and people complained. But they don't care. They just simply, they do it because they have the power. The question is only for how long.
Yeah, yeah. And that brings us to the future. What would you say about the prospects of the AfD in the future, especially next year? Do you see it just continuing to ascend?
Yes. Yes. Well, as I said, 2024 is a very important year. Election year in Germany,
and in America with the presidential election.
Oh yeah, I forgot about America, but well, yeah.
And in Britain as well. I realized the other day the general election is probably going to be next year. Not that it's very exciting, but the German situation is much more exciting in my view. So continue.
Well, we have the European election coming up in June. Beginning of June, while at the same time in Germany, local elections will be held in eight federal states, in which city and district parliaments will be re-elected. I think in English or in Britain, in Britain, it's constituents or something, not districts.
Yeah, it's an awkward word to say, constituencies.
Yeah. Constituencies, exactly. Yeah, there are also provincial or state elections coming up in Germany, in Saxony, in Thuringia, and in Brandenburg. And as I mentioned before, in all of these states, we have Saxony, we have 34%, Thuringia, we have 33%, Brandenburg, we have 32% at the moment, and we're still working on it. So I think it is not the end of the line. The predictions are already quite good. But of course we are trying to get to convince more voters to vote for us. And because in fact there is a big chance that the AfD will become the first state premier in Saxony after the elections. And that means that we would take over the reins of government in Saxony. And that would be, we always talk about these small steps, like, for example, Lord Mayor or other things that we take over from the old dusty parties. But this in particular would be, that would not only be a brick out of the wall, that would be a massive hole in the wall that I would call it the beginning of the end, because then we would be able to show exactly how we think politics should be made and should look like in Germany in general. But we can start, of course, with Saxony, changing again the educational system, changing the way, for example, start to send back the illegal asylum seekers, at least those who are still in Saxony. All these things we can start, and people will see, wow, there's something happening. And it is possible to change politics for the better, for the people, in the interest of the people. And that is a massive thing. And yeah, but still, I'm also looking forward to Austria next year, because they have also federal parliamentary elections. And the FPÖ is also very high in the polls. I think 30%, 6% in front of the socialists. And I hope for a few percent more even there, so that it could be possible that to ensure that it is no longer possible to form a government in Austria without the FPÖ as a senior party. And this is always the important thing. Never be the junior in a coalition. You always have to make the calls. Otherwise, you will drown. It was always the same when the CDU found a coalition partner. For most of the time, it was the FDP, the liberals. The CDU always burned them. Yeah, they used them, and then they dumped them somewhere, and then they used the next coalition partner. That was the way these fake conservatives were working over the last decades. But anyway, I think 2024, and then presidential elections. Wow, that was it's going to be very interesting. And but in the regard of Germany, we can really make there's change is possible. And I think when we work a bit more and a bit harder to convince people, and on the other hand, we trying to work hard, of course. But then again, if this government is going on the way they do it, the way they really ruin everything. Like next year, there are many things that are changing for the German people that will make their lives even harder. In the restaurant business, the VAT will rise from 7% to 19%. So that means that when you want to buy yourself a nice Wiener Schnitzel for 26 euros, it will be 30 euros without quenching your thirst with a good German beer. Who's able to afford that, to go into a restaurant and pay over 30 euros for a single meal? And this will kill a lot of restaurants and stuff like that in Germany in the upcoming year.
Yeah, someone said in the chat, green tards are great red pillars because they red pill the public against their own policies.
Well, I have another one. I would say, if you are aware of color theory, yeah, what happens if you mix up red and green? What comes out of it?
I don't actually know. The brown.
Exactly. A huge pile of red.
That's interesting. All right. Well, that sounds great. It sounds like it's optimistic.
Yeah.
Because Germany has been in a bad state for a long time. And the condition...
And it still is.
When Merkel... Oh, I know. And when Merkel was in power, it just seemed like there was no hope and everything was just getting worse and worse. But it seems like the AfD is a source of hope, and it seems like now is a time of optimism.
To say it with the words of Annalena Baerbock, the AfD is a beacon of hope.
Yeah.
You know that one? Have you heard about it?
No, she
actually wanted to say in any kind of press conference, she was referring, of course, to a beacon of hope. But she said bacon of hope. It was hilarious. It was amazing. You see, that is the competence I was talking about.
Right, right, right. Okay. That's good. Rather unfortunate accident.
Very unfortunate.
Okay. Well, there are actually a lot of super chats, so I'm going to go through them now. Okay, here we go. Vingul, reminder that America forced guest workers from Turkey onto Germany in the 60s. The West German government didn't want their help. I'm sure Herr Korte knows more about this. America forced Turkish guest workers onto Germany in the 60s. The way I heard about this, and it was the same in Netherlands and in Austria, was that the Turkish guest workers, well, the idea was that they would leave after 2 or 3 years.
Exactly.
But of course, that never happened. Stefan, take it away.
It's exactly the thing. I mean, it started with the agreement that one day they would, of course, go back to their homeland. But it's I have to say that even there in that particular field, the Greens are able to change German history with a snap of a finger. They say that we had no Trümmerfrauen, yeah, these women, the German women who sorted the bricks after the war and worked hard labor, because of course their men were still POVs or whatever, and the Greens say, oh no, that never existed. It was the Turkish guest workers that built up Germany in the 60s. Yeah, hell, what did we do before? Yeah, we were all sitting on our arses and just waiting for Christmas or what? I mean, you see, they're completely idiotic in every way. Whatever they say, it is nonsense. But then again, even Kohl, I think even in the era of Kohl, it was still in the discussion that these people should actually leave again. I'm not sure why. I mean, of course, there if your own country is actually ruled by the US, by the United States, in fact, and every parliamentary or especially all this chancellor have to ask for permission on certain things, then it is of course difficult to say, okay, what really happened in the background. We will never know what was happening, as long as the AfD is not coming to power, so that we can actually open, we call them poisonous cupboards, and we can draw out the and see what was really happening in the background. It is a thing that that confused many people in Germany. Interestingly, in the 60s, also in the 70s, there were television series that were making hard political satire. What is it called?
Satire.
Yeah, yeah. And if you would watch it today, I mean, you would laugh your asses off. But it is not vogue anymore. It is not adequate to see this. But they were also talking exactly about this subject. It is a subject that indeed I haven't been so much in contact with. But it's true. They should have gone back. But interestingly, I have to say that this first generation of Turks that came to Germany, they still had an immense respect for Germany and for Germans. That declined with the generations. The second generation was already a bit problematic. But I had a very good friend, that old fellow was a teacher in school. And whenever there was something going on, then something went wrong, with a child of the second generation. He called the father, and they came to the school. He was explaining the situation, and yeah, of course, that there was a slap left and right from the Turkish father, and bowing, and I'm sorry, yeah. And yeah, see what's happening today. No respect anymore towards German society, towards German code of law, towards whatever. So all these things went down the toilet. But this first generation, even though they should not been there anymore, they still had the proper respect.
Yeah. And I've heard that they tend to vote for the left as well in Germany. Like the Turkish migrants, I mean, tend to vote left in Germany, Austria, and Netherlands.
Well, I can tell you that some of them, I can't tell you exactly how many, but first of all, the AfD, you can see it in two different ways, but the AfD has members, which are Turks, yeah, which believe that what is happening in Germany at this moment is absolutely ridiculous, especially Turkish people with a company which are paying their taxes in a proper way, which trying to educate their children, which are speaking German, yeah, proper German. That is also happening absolutely without any accent, and they really wanted to integrate into the society, and. And yeah, we have these kind of people which are voting for the AfD as Turks, as even I know an Afghan person from Afghanistan. He would vote if he would be able to vote. Yeah, he would vote for the AfD because he accepts and he adapts to the German society, to the German culture. He's not pushing his children in any other way than being well educated, learn the language in the proper way. If all these people would be like that, it would be half of the problem. Still, anyway, too many of one thing is not a good thing. We already discussed this, but then again, it's not you can't say that all. Turks from the first generation was actually voting on the to the left, and especially not in the days that are ahead and what is coming. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I didn't mean off the first generation. I meant nowadays. That's what I heard.
Even then, I mean, if there's a big difference. There's this immense difference between Turks and other Muslims. Which got a proper education, which learned something in school, which can really speak German and absolutely perfect. They don't want these idiots. Let's call them like that. Yeah, they don't want these idiots here. They say, why are we so soft? They would just simply take them by the neck and throw them out of the country. And that's the first thing I heard when I started to get into politics again in 2003. That was the first discussion I had with a Polish guy, yeah, on a petrol station. He was just simply referring to us Germans as cowards and weaklings because if he would have something to say, he would just grab these bastards and throw them out of the country. That was the way the Polish was talking with me.
Yeah, okay, quite to the point. All right. Does Stefan know about Der Flügel, the nationalist section of the AfD?
Yes, I do. All right. So what do you want to know?
He's just asking, are you associated with it?
No, I'm not associated with them, and you can't be associated with them anymore because it's not existing anymore. That was one of these points where this office for protection of the constitution and the media was always pushing that subject because they said that it was the right extremist wing of the AfD, and they were of course all Nazis, as they said.
Well, everyone's a Nazi, apparently.
Yeah, but especially they were very special Nazis. And because we wanted to protect the party, we wanted to protect our members, and we wanted to avoid the fact that people would terminate their membership because of that, and because of some people we had within our party that were maybe a little bit too extreme, actually not in our party itself, but before they got in they became a member of the AfD, and but it doesn't matter. So we decided, and also Björn Hacke and some other people decided that it would be best to stop this project Der Flügel, and now it's just the AfD. Everybody is the same.
Right, okay. All right, chips and salsa. I've seen your super chat, but I'm not going to ask it. I think it wouldn't be relevant to many people. The AfD's got different positions on different issues.
That happens.
Okay, and Cat Hugger, people in the state of Hamburg started a people's initiative to stop gender language, attempt to make a German gender neutral. So the Hamburg Conservative Party publicly supported this people's initiative to stop gender language. Then the AfD said, okay, but you are literally the people making the law. So they put in a legislative suggestion to officially ban gender language, and the Conservative Party then voted against it. Kat Hugger is saying that the Conservative, I think that must be the CDU, agreed that gender neutral language was a bad idea, but didn't do anything about it. And then when they were pressured to ban it, they refused.
Yeah, that is the typical behavior of the fake conservatives. When there's a little pressure, they decide. No, it's the same with things that are happening today. Suddenly, the CDU, who started the migration invasion, not crisis, but in the invasion in 2015 in the first place, now they suddenly want a hard change of course regarding this, and they want to have more sandbags, and they want to have things changed. But then again, it's just because it's their way of making their own propaganda to tell the people again, yeah, we are actually the good ones. And as you said earlier on, people are really they forget a lot of things way too quickly. This is, of course, all it's politics. It's a typical thing that happens. And regarding German language, I think it is this whole gender speech and so on and so forth. It's a disgusting thing, and we have many, many even artists that do support this. This view, and the AfD itself has also something in their program regarding to save the German language from this nonsense, and that would be one of the very important things to keep this nonsense away from the German language.
Good. I do think this stuff really matters in a way that some people don't. I think it's not obvious to everyone why this kind of thing matters, but it's a question of maintaining standards, maintaining cultural integrity, and maintaining the unique beauty of the German language.
Yeah, by the way, the unique beauty of the German language. I mean, just one example where you see that our society is really degenerating, and Germans sometimes have this tendency to adapt to things where they shouldn't. For example, a mobile phone, something like this, yeah, It's a simple mobile phone. In Germany, they call it handy. What the fuck? Why do you call it handy? Many people, you would find, I think the majority of the Germans would say, where's my handy? Where's my handy? Instead of saying, okay, where's my mobile phone? So what kind of... Because
is that an Americanism? Is that or something from...
I can't tell you exactly where it's coming from. Right. I just know that, in fact, handy is practical. Yeah, it is an English word. I mean, this handy and stuff like that.
Useful. Yeah.
Useful. Yeah. It, of course, indeed, it is a useful tool. But then again, it stays. Whatever you do, it can't make you coffee or cook a meal or something. It is just a phone.
Yeah.
So a phone should stay a phone. And this is something what shows that society sometimes in Germany has these awkward things where you can just ask yourself, where the hell is it coming from?
I know that about German language. There are some modern English words that Germans have adopted and haven't translated. They haven't come up with their own word. They just use the English word. And I was very amused to hear the word shitstorm being used. And actually, in a formal context, I think it was a politician said, and it was in a quote, and it was a paragraph of German, but in the middle of it was the word shitstorm.
I think because the word shitstorm is not so, it doesn't sound that gross than if you would translate it to German.
It would be Scheißestürme.
Ein Sturm der Scheiße, yeah, or ein Scheiß. Well, Scheiße is very, very gross. So shit is less gross, but of course only for Germans because that is the problem with the language.
Okay, Kevin says, much respect for all your work woes. Is there any Scottish party which is more like the AFD instead of globalist like the SNP? There are small, very small parties. Scotland is a much smaller population than Germany, of course. But I think with the AFD, what we're seeing is German competence at creating something that works. Something that a formula that works, a method that works, a machine, a party machine that works. I can't think of any other country that has something like this yet. But maybe I'm ignorant. I probably am. I wouldn't be surprised if Sweden or Austria have, or the Netherlands even.
Austria, FPÖ.
Yeah, the FPÖ certainly in Austria. But again, that's German competence.
Some might say that.
I mean, I don't mean to be negative about everyone else. I'm not slavish towards the Germans. I'm just saying I think this other countries will probably end up learning from Germany's example with the AFD. That's what I suspect. As for Scotland, no, I don't think so. Scotland is too small to pioneer something like this, and it's too weak, And also the regime is so powerful in Scotland and there's a lot of corruption in the regime. So, and by the regime, I mean the government, the state, the councils, even the courts to some extent. It's a different situation. Stefan, right. Yeah, I think that's all of those. CJ, I'm not going to ask that question. Come on, be realistic. And
sounds funny.
No, it's all right. Okay, Black Pigeon Pilled. What would the response be?
I know that guy.
Sorry?
I know that guy.
Yes, you do. You do. What would the response be of Germany once a definitive and public culprit is identified for the sabotage of Nord Stream?
Simple answer. It depends on the government we have. If we would have a government like this, nothing would happen, nothing at all. That is very unfortunate, but things happen. And if we would have a government that is led by the AFD, then I'm pretty sure the consequences would be a bit more dramatic. in the terms that, of course, it wasn't only me that was saying that this was an act of war. There were some others within the AfD that called it an act of war. And, of course, you have to respond accordingly to an act of war. Well, what comes into my mind at this point would be to give the Americans the final notice on Rammstein, for example. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about 30,000 American soldiers in Germany still being here, compared to probably 300 British soldiers that are still in Germany. And of course, this would be the proper response. To be a bit more blunt, we could say, get the fuck out of here.
If only. I mean, in this sense, Germany seems like an occupied country. I was told that there was never actually a peace treaty between America and Germany, and that's why the American air military bases remain in Germany. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, well, it is. It's partially true. In fact, there was not a single peace treaty with any country that the German Empire was, or the Third Reich, that people say, was at war with. Not a single one. And that is an interesting point where you ask yourself the question, what is going on? And you also have to ask yourself the question, why, in heaven's name, was it so important for the Americans to actually push and press every possible country to declare war on Germany? I mean,
yeah,
Argentina and Paraguay and Uruguay and whatsoever. What was the reason for that? And this is a subject that I also discussed in my book, actually, because there's always the question that comes up when you talk about, and the Russians raised the question as well. They raised the question of the sovereignty of Germany a few times in their programs, and also I think Putin said it in any kind of a certain way. So you have to see that these things are important, is still important, is the same way as people are still asking me questions, at least outside of Germany, about the eastern provinces. Yeah, and of course, this is also an issue that you cannot discuss in a civilized manner in Germany. If you throw up that, no, throw up is a bad point. If you come up with this question in Germany, you're a Nazi. End of the story. Yeah. If you simply ask the question, what about the eastern provinces? Why did we have to give them away? What was the reason for it? And so on. You can discuss this everywhere in this planet except for Germany.
Yeah. I should say we've only got 10 minutes left, so I'll have to race through these super chats. Slumtopia asks you the following. I was recently in Frankfurt and was shocked by the amount of open drug use, even hard drugs. What does the average German think of this? Is it something they have become accustomed to seeing in everyday life?
No, absolutely not. I think these are the hot spots you're referring to. Of course, Frankfurt is a lost place. It is a lost city. And there are some other places, like, for example, in Berlin, Kottbusser Tor, Kottbusser Gate. There's also a place where you don't want to be there during nighttime. There are many drug dealers. There is violence. There is, of course, drug abuse and stuff like that. But is this this happens only in hotspots. And it's not like for example in America where we have whole streets full of people squatting.
Oh God, it's unbelievable
stuff like that. Yeah, I was shocked when I saw that first time.
Yeah, the footage from Philadelphia and Los Angeles, Seattle, it's
Detroit.
Shocking. Okay, what? Okay, so many of Europe's monarchs derived from Germany. Would Stefan welcome back a Kaiser?
Why? Why is it a question that I'm pretty sure I know the guy again who asked that question? well, in fact, you should be as a proper Democrat. You should be open to every possibility. The fact is that there are only two things that are important. Politics for Germany and whoever is doing the politics should act in the interests of Germany and then the interests of the German people. And if someone from the heritage of the Kaiser comes around and says, okay, I might be the proper person for the job, then yeah, we can discuss this. But I think aristocracy and monarchy in Germany, that's a long time ago, and I doubt that people would easily adapt to that again.
Right. Okay. And if Britain left the EU predominantly out of alarm at Merkel's open door policy with refugees, what would it take for Germany to leave the EU? And even if the majority of Germans wanted this, would it be permitted?
what it would take is a government led by the AfD. That's the first and most important thing that it would take. And as far as I remember, a smart person once said to me, you're always as sovereign as you act. Yeah, if you don't act sovereign, then you aren't sovereign. But when, for example, you say, all right, thank you very much, that's it. We don't pay anymore, for we are not the sanctuary for every receiving state in Europe. Then it's that, and it is a contract that Germany signed, and it's not more than a contract. And every contract can be terminated, end of the line. You just have to do it. So, and of course, we can be clear that the termination of this contract would be the end of the European Union, which is a good thing.
Yes, indeed. Yes, it would. That would leave it as a French project, and some people say it was
just leave it to them. It's no problem at all.
Yeah, it just wouldn't be tenable. And then finally, and this is something that we intended to talk about, I'm sorry, it's just come up at the end. What inspired you to write a book, and what do you wish to achieve with its publication?
Well, my book. Well, the idea of this book actually came from a speech I gave at the Traditional Britain Group a year ago. The speech led to an article that I wrote about Germany's completely misplaced allegiance to the USA, which I criticized massively in it. And the response was very positive. So I decided to write a small booklet about it. And this bloody booklet grew from month to month, and suddenly this booklet, which supposed to have maybe 100 pages, suddenly had 213 in the English version, in the German version 236. Of course, this topic, I think it is extremely important in these days. And it is always difficult to decide, especially what kind of information you need to include in this extreme difficult subject. And my aim was always to write a book from an empirical perspective, with a healthy dose of pragmatism, so that it explains the geopolitical context and backgrounds that are necessary to better understand the current situation in Eastern Europe in a way that everyone is capable to understand it. And because of that, of course, I make no academic claims with this book, but it is a capable, but it is capable of, well, let's say, conveying geopolitics in its background to everyone in an understandable way. And I received a couple of reviews already for this book, and they were all very positive. So at least the 7 months in which I wrote this book were not completely in vain. So the thing is that, of course, it would be great if more people would buy the book, which actually looks like this. Yeah, it's a very pretty book, actually.
Okay, yes, very nice. Yes, I like that. Yes.
And of course, I wrote it in German and in English. And because it's, I heard that it that Christmas is coming, and because Christmas is coming, I have a little Christmas present to the first three people who's going to write me an email to this address. The first three people who will write to this address and give me just their name. Just their avatar name, then they will receive a book for free, of course.
If you can you send me a link to where people can buy it in English, and I will sure, add to the video description.
I can also send it to you to buy it in German, but.
I'm just thinking that most of my audience are English speakers, but yes, if you send me both links, I'll add them both to the description. So that hopefully will help to get you some sales.
I just had a bit of problems with my printing house. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, this has been a really interesting talk. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. I think it's gone well. So, all right, I will be back in about 5 minutes with the next guest. But Stefan Korte, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial 2020.
Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. All right, I'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Find the info at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation. All aboard. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.